Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare, Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare, Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare.
Thank you.
कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सारे गौर भक्तवृंद चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सारे गौर भक्तवृंद
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
राम राम हर हर
Thank you.
శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణారవింద భక్తి వేదాంత గోస్వామి మహర్షిల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం నిత్రిలా ప్రవిష్టోం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిబ్రజగాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షిల ప్రభుపాదికి అనందకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీహరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండి గిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామ్కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమనంది ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరవ్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద నమో శుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలేశమతి భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామినిటి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వదేవం గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణే ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ അജ്ഞാനത്വിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജന ശലാകയ ചക്ഷുരുന്മിലിതം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതാം യേന ഭൂതലെ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതിം സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണ രഘുനാഥാൻവിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദം ലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാംശ്ച ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ഹസ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗി രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസ്തുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദം ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാമനുസന്ദദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം നമോസ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഹുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്രം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപം പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേ ത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹ വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസജാനൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതി കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോത്തീർണം ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണ നദി കൈവർത്തക കേശവാം പാരാശര്യവജ സരോജവമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകകേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാഭോദിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേവീയമാനം മുദം ഭൂയാദ്ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യബ്രഹ്മ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവേ വേദൈ സംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദേർഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദു സുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, it's like last week we were mentioning that as soon as we say Bhagavad Gita, immediately we have to get that picture of Arjuna sitting in the chariot, Krishna driving the chariot, holding the rein, and the five horses taking the chariot further in the battlefield. Vedavyasa Maharshi has a reason why this particular episode in the Mahabharata war has been brought out in the way that it has relevance to our life today. This is why it is so important. We should not think that this has something happened 5,000 years ago, some historical incident has happened, and that was finished with that. No, it is not. Because that is why Bhagavad Gita has been studied by great personalities, and they have always found in Bhagavad Gita a message forever. As soon as you get a human body in this world, you have a need of Bhagavad Gita there, because Bhagavad Gita drives you, takes you further from there, because everyone in this world is actually perplexed by the material world and material life, is it not? Everyone is perplexed by the material world and material life, what this is all about. And in that ignorance, we are trying to drive this chariot called this body. And that's what we are trying to do. But therefore, this knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita, this particular message of establishing that chariot is a very important thing. As long as you can remember that chariot in your mind, that this is chariot Krishna is driving, and it has actually, this same principle has come from Upanishads. I mentioned that to you before, in Kathopanishad, this is exactly the same thing that is depicted in a few verses. A little bit more detailed than in Bhagavad Gita. Kathopanishad has gone, because Upanishads, as you know, this particularly Kathopanishad is one of the major Upanishads. Out of the many Upanishads, 108 or so, major 10 Upanishads on which the great Acharyas have commented. All Acharya, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they have taken the same major 10 Upanishads while commenting on the argument of supporting their philosophy from the Vedic literature, particularly from the Upanishads. So Kathopanishad falls into that category. And if you study Kathopanishad, you will find there exactly the same thing, a little bit more in a elaborate level. Prabhupada has quoted that verses from Kathopanishad, as I mentioned before, in the 6th chapter, verse 34, in the purport you will find there. These verses are written there. What does it say? If you keep that in the picture all the time, then Bhagavad Gita studying is a lot more easier, because the various questions which comes from Arjuna and how Krishna has answered them in different circumstances, explaining the importance of the one particular point, particularly the mind. The mind is everything. It is on this mind that we are trying to hit all the time. It is the mind that is causing all the problems. And it is the very mind which Krishna is trying to explain how to deal with it throughout Bhagavad Gita, through all the different yoga systems. There is no other enemy for us, as a friend as well as enemy, unlike the mind. That we'll see later when you go into that little bit more detail. But here, what we have to remember is, this Krishna is saying in the Upanishads, the sages have already recorded this, Almanam Radhanam Vidhi, Shariram Radham Evaja, Buddhim Tu Saradam Vidhi, Manapragraham Evaja. Almanam Radhanam Vidhi, Alma is a soul, he is the passenger in the chariot. Just like this material body we have got in, immediately we are the passenger in this material body. One who identifies with the material body, with the chariot, he is a fool. He does not know. That's what Shastras are saying. But one who realizes that I am not this chariot, I am not this vehicle, rather I am the person, the passenger, travelling in this chariot. Atmanam Radhanam Vidhi. This is how the Upanishads talk about Shariram Radham Evaja. The material body is the chariot actually. Buddhim Tu Saradhim Vidhi. Intelligence is actually the charioteer. Krishna has been given that position by Arjuna, and Arjuna became protected by that. Buddhim Tu Saradhim Vidhi. Mana Pragraham Evaja. Mind is that rein which controls the horses. So sometimes you can compare this in many, many ways. You will find this example very valid. It's so valid and it's so appropriate that if you read the explanations subsequent to these verses in the Kathopanishad, you'll understand that how powerful this message of Bhagavad Gita is. But, and where things are going wrong, you'll also know what's happening to all of us. What's happening to all of us in our daily life. Why we are unable to control our mind? Why we are always victimized by the mind? Mind is dragging us in different directions. And in order to get a control on the mind, it is necessary to understand Krishna's explanations in Bhagavad Gita about the mind, and also how to get the mind under control. So, there you will see that Indriyani hayanya ho vishayam steshu ko ajaran Atmendriya mano yukto bhukti etyahur manishinam. Then the Upanishad says like this, Indriyani hayanya ho vishayam steshu ko ajaran. the senses will go after the senses. Actually, this topic in the Bhagavad Gita is such an important and interesting topic. Gives you enough substance or food for thought. Throughout, you can sit and think about it. And it is so spoken by the sages and Krishna also. In the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Bhagavatam you will find this approach from Krishna to explain to different devotees who came to him for spiritual instructions. You will find this particular topic discussed all the time. We will come to that later. And only then you will realize that how that close relationship between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. As I mentioned before, Bhagavad Gita is the science of spiritual life. Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of those personalities who have took this message from Bhagavad Gita and practiced it in their own life. So you can see how these two things together can give a complete information for a personality, for a devotee who comes to the spiritual life. Both are necessary. Bhagavad Gita is necessary as well as Srimad Bhagavatam is necessary. Only when you relate it together, you will notice the interesting episodes in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and how Krishna has kept the same philosophy without any deviation in Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in this Kathopanishad, when they spoke about these verses, Atmanam rathanam vidhi shariram ratham evato buddhim tu saradim vidhi manapragraham evacham indriyani hayanyahur vishayan desha gocharan atmendriyamano yuktam bhokti etyahur manishinam. That is what Srila Prabhupada quoted in the Bhagavad Gita. After that verse, in the next verse in the Kathopanishad, it says like this, that if you do not follow this, and if you do not understand this instruction in the Kathopanishad, what will happen? That's what is in the next verse it says. Yes, avijnanavan bhavadim bhavat ayuktena manasa sada. Suppose one has avijnanavan. Avijnanavan means one who has no knowledge. In ignorance, he is carrying on his life in ignorance without accepting this knowledge of the sages. If he continues his life like that, yes, avijnanavan bhavati ayuktena manasa sada. If he continuously allow his mind to wander in all directions, what will happen to him? Tasyendriyani avashyani dushtashwa ivasarathe. He will not be able to control the senses and he will not be able to get the control on the senses because he has allowed the mind to go. And what will happen? Dushtashwa ivasarathe. The five horses, they will drive in five different directions. One horse will say that I want to go and eat something in the restaurant, something nice food. Somebody else will say, I want to go and see something to satisfy my eyes. And somebody else will say, I want to smell something. Somebody else will say, I want to enjoy something else. So all the different kinds of senses, they will not listen to the mind. They will go completely out of control. And that's what Kathopanishad is saying here. Yes, avijnanavan bhavadim. That he will become ignorant. He will have no knowledge. Why? Because ayuktena manasa sadaha. He has no control on his mind. What will happen? Tasyendriyani vashyani. He has become helpless, hopeless case. Because dushtashwa ivasarathe. He has got these five horses which are actually driving him in the all wrong directions. So, then vijnanasar indriya astum manapragrahanam mara sodhvana praramapnodi tadvishno paramam padam. If one has learned the art of controlling the mind and through which to control the senses, then eventually the very same mind will help him to reach that destination. Tadvishno paramam padam. The ultimate goal of life, Krishna's lotus feet. You will reach there. That's what they say. Vijnanasaradiye vyastu manapragrahavanara sodhvana paramatmodi tadvishno paramam padam. The journey of this life can be very, very complicated. and can be completed safely as long as the supreme world of Vishnu is reached only if one keeps a watchful control over the senses. All this is from Lord Brahma. This whole thing starts from Lord Brahma. Brahma was given the authenticity to create the living entities, right? He was given the authenticity to create the living entities. When Brahma, after thousands of years of penances, when he heard the word from the sky, Taba Taba, to perform austerities, he heard this Ashariri from the sky. And when he heard that, then he performed austerities and eventually he reached Vaikuntham, where he saw Krishna. And that discussion between Krishna and Brahma is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What happened there was Krishna shook hands with Brahma and gave the Sarga Shakti or creative power to Brahma to continue with the creation, to start the creation. At that time, Brahma raised certain questions and Krishna has answered that. So this body what we have got, please do not think it is the product of father and mothers working together. No, it is not. Many, many demigods have a role in this body. All the senses in this body, they are controlled by the demigods. Different demigods for five senses of knowledge, five senses of action, and the three subtle. Only if you understand the complexity of this material body, you can appreciate that what a powerful source is behind this working to control this material body. In the normal world, when I'm talking about in the modern world, our understanding is the two people had sexual relationship, a child is born. That's our understanding begins from there. But if you go from the Upanishads and the Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita, you will understand that this material body is not a simple creation of a father or a mother. And the people, personalities involved in producing this body are so many. That is why Krishna is saying that I have given this body to him and I have taken help from all these assistants called the demigods. They have all contributed in creating this material body. And after getting that body, if one does not recognize the significance of life, human life, but simply use that body to gratify his senses, Krishna says, what hope is there? What hope is there for a person like that? That is why these questions are very deeper questions in life. Where did this body come from? Who is behind this body? That we will come to that later. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are discussed a lot more in depth. But here, for the moment, we should know how Brahma created this body. When Brahma created this body, he had certain considerations. As you know, in the third canto, when Brahma was creating, his main criteria was where the spine of the body should be. For example, he created certain certain bodies where the spinal cord is in a horizontal level. Now the four-legged animals, the cats, dogs, and so many of them, their spinal, is vertebrae, isn't it? Yeah, the vertical thing in the behind. That is horizontal for the animals. Then he created the vertical one, where we all belong to. Then he made something in an angle, which are the birds like. They all have their angular disposition of the vertebra. So, keeping this in three different places, and then last one, he also created the snakes and the others, who have got horizontally lying on the floor, which moves with their muscles on their body. They get their power to move. So different kinds of creations, Brahma has created keeping this as the angle on which everything has been built up. So what happened was, that when he did the creation, the soul is the one which activates everything. I mentioned that before, that if you look at that picture of Bhagavad Gita, you can immediately realize that the horses are the most external ones, isn't it? The one which is dealing with the world are the horses. Horses are running and it's controlled by the rein, which is the mind. And Krishna is situated as a charioteer, is pulling the rein, the intelligence. And behind him, the soul, Arjuna, is sitting there. So Arjuna is the passenger, Krishna is pulling that and controlling and taking this body in the right direction, in the right way it has to go. When Brahma created, what happened was, interior, the innermost thing is the soul. You can see there. Innermost thing is the soul. Surrounded the soul is the intelligence. Surrounding the intelligence is the mind. And surrounding the mind is the senses. And surrounding the senses is the sense objects. Isn't it? Or the external world. Now, if you take the soul away from that, the rest of it is all useless. They cannot function on their own. Only when Krishna's part and parcel, us, the jiva, got inside there, the whole thing became active. Only at that point it became active. Till then it could not function. Just to show the importance of the soul in the body. And what do? We ignore that thing completely and take the horses and the sense objects, the most important, and continue with our life. This is where we commit the biggest mistake. So, when the soul came into the body, what has normally happened is, soul start giving the electricity or the energy to all the other components in the body. The intelligence got it, the mind got it, the senses got it, and in that way started flowing externally. Because it started flowing externally towards from the soul, this is the reason why our mind is always looking outwards. You may have seen that. You may have noticed always in 24 hours, how many hours the mind look inwards in all our life. Most of the people, 99%, I would say 100% you can say, virtually, the mind is always looking outwards. Looking outwards, that means it goes to the senses, go to the external world, that's all. It doesn't do anything else. It has no time to go back the opposite direction. Why? Brahma is created like that. Brahma is created in such a way that the soul from inside gives the energy to go to the mind, to the intelligence, then the mind, then the senses, and then outwards. So once this process starts, as soon as you get up in the morning, the mind starts thinking. Go to the external world and start inquiring everything. Oh, what has happened in America? What has happened in India? What has happened in Australia? This inquiry starts from then. The news has come. Haven't you read the news? This person who is inquiring, he is not inquiring about himself. He doesn't know anything, what is going on. All this American, Australia has pulled inside and he is trying to assimilate all these things inside. He himself do not know what is going on within him. That he has no knowledge, but he is busy with all the other inquiries of the world. This is the most unfortunate thing. The sages who knew that the problem is not outside. The problem is this flow of thing from soul to the external senses has to be reversed back. It has to come back to the soul. Only then the whole problem will go. Because it is, Srimad Bhagavatam is very clear about this one point. You will see there in the Bhagavatam, there are so many descriptions about the way mind and intelligence and the sleeping at night and the dreaming and the day activity. These are discussed at different places. Through different stories and different incidents, Vedavyas wants to wake us up from our ignorance. Basically that's what he's trying to do. He wants us to wake up from our total ignorance. Total ignorance means completely absorbed in the body. That is our ignorance, isn't it? No knowledge of the soul and no habit of looking inwards. This is the difference between the saintly personalities. Great sages like Vasishtha, Vishwamitra, Atri, Gautama, Kanada, Pipalada, Parashuram, all the great personalities, you'll find thousands of them mentioned in the Vedic literature. What is the difference between them and us? They are always looking inwards. We are always looking outwards. We are called Bahirmukha. Bahirmukha means our mind is always directed externally. Their mind is always directed internally. They're always looking inwards. They think that there is nothing to search outside. Everything searches inside to happen. As long as you are in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is within the heart, you know everything what goes on in this world. You will have the answer to all your questions. You don't have to go on searching after every little information in this world. Krishna can provide you all the data what you need to know. So this misunderstanding begins from that day itself, when Brahma has created the body like this. So the going back inwards and looking inwards towards the soul is spiritual life. That's what spiritual life means. So here in Kathopanishad it says like this, that what Brahma has done, he says here, this is a discussion between a disciple and Yamaraj, and that we'll talk later. Paranjighani vidana swayambhu, that Brahma swayambhu, when he is created, the paranjighani, everything is outwards. The mind is looking outwards. Mind never tells you to look inwards, does it? Does it tell you anytime any mind tells anyone to look inwards? No. Mind is always telling, get the newspaper, get the television, get radios, get this, get that, and hear this, hear that. Like this, mind is busy. So virtually, the intelligence is also not able to contribute very much into it, because mind has taken over everything. And it is this control of the mind is the most critical thing in spiritual life, getting this mind under control. And that is done through different processes, yogic processes, and the process of chanting the holy name also is eventually bring this mind under control. This is what the initial stage is, what happens with the chanting. Paranjighani sprudana swayambhum stasmat paranki pashani andaratman. Therefore, Kathopanishad says, because it is Swayambhu, Brahma is created like this, Paranjighani, everything is outside, It is not able to look inwards. And andar alpan, not able to see the soul inside. It requires so much convincing today that there is a thing called the soul inside. Is it not? Many people are still doubtful and suspicious about the existence of the soul in the body. Is it not? Then many people will ask this question. They want hundreds of classes and hundreds of hours of association before they can accept there is a thing called the soul in the body. And this is this unfortunate thing. And Kathopanishad is saying this has only happened because everything is paranjikhani. Everything is going outwards. Kashidhira pratyagalpanamaikshal. Dhira, one who is very, dhira means one is sober, and who is very courageous, who has understood this. This is what the knowledge that has been pumped into the disciple's mind from the very beginning by the spiritual master. Kashchit dhira pratyagatmanam aikshat. He will immediately see, dhira will see the soul, pratyagalma. Pratyagalma means soul which is inside. Krishna's part and parcel which is inside. That is pratyagalma. And soul which is outside, because Krishna is inside as well as outside, that is Paralma. Paralma and Pratyagalma. So he will turn his mind straight away, the disciple will turn his mind inwards to see the soul. He will be inquiring about the soul after that. Avradal Chaksham Amradatvami Chal. Who will inquire? The person who wants to free oneself this process of changing bodies. He is the person who will do that, not anybody else. Such a person who is convinced about the transmigration of the soul from one body to another, and one who has understood this way the particular body is constructed by Lord Brahma, he will inquire for pratyagalpa, that is, Krishna is part and parcel inside, by directing his vision inwards. This is what Kathopanishad says. In the next verse it says, Paranjikhaman aniyandibalaste mrityoryaidi vidastasya vasham abhadhora amrutatvam viditva madhyesihana prajayan prathayandem. The self-existent spirit worked its way out from within, and thus the openings of the mind are directed outwards. The sense organs, therefore, do men's thoughts ever tend outwards. But the few who have true understanding turn their mind inwards and realize the self within. Those without understanding, who do not control themselves and pursue external pleasures, fall into the widespread net of birth and death. Those of steady mind, realizing what is truly lasting, do not turn their thoughts to transient pleasures. Very important, because those people, those personalities who want to inquire about the truth, they will shut their eyes, shut their all other senses to the external world and drive it inwards. Those who do not know about it, what they will happen is, they will simply go after the external world and then they will suffer from that. This is what Kathopanishad says. Now, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while coming to these verses, you can see that Krishna has discussed about this very nicely in many, many instances through examples, and Krishna had to convince a lot of people about it, the intricacy of the mind. He spoke to Uddhava a few times about it, and Kapila Vasudeva spoke to Devahuti Devi about it. In the story of the Puranjana Vakhyanam, Puranjana story in the fourth canto, the same thing is discussed again. So throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find this one topic discussed by the sages for various reasons. Sudeva Goswami has not forgotten that he had to tell Parikshit Maharaj that this is our whole problem. After all, he says, Ateshu avidhyamanebi samsrutirna nivartate. Samsrutirna nivartate. Dhyayato vishyonam sam swapne anarthagamo yatha. This one verse, you will find the Srimad Bhagavatam repeated about 6 or 7 times. The same verse is repeated 6 or 7 times in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ateshu avidhyamanebi samsrutirna nivartate. Samsrutirna dhyayato vishyonam pumsan swapne anarthagamo yatha. Krishna is saying, Sudeva Goswami says to Parikshit that if the mind is not directed inwards, what will happen is, mind will be absorbed in samsaram. Samsaram means material existence. That will be where the mind will be. Samsaram will be the place where the mind will be. Arteshu avidhyamanevi samsidir na nivartade. You will not be able to get out of this material existence if you do not turn inwards. Why? The answer is given there. Jayado vishayan pumsam samsaram. Jayado vishayanasyam swapne anarthagamo yatham. Suppose you went to bed in the night and you went to sleep. And in your sleeping, you got some dreams have come. Some dreams have come to you. And in that dream, you are experiencing so many different things. So many different things you are experiencing in the dream. And what is the, Krishna says there, what is the importance of these dreams and what is happening inside the dream? Inside the dream, for example, while you are dreaming so many different things, when you are in the process of dreaming, sometimes you are experiencing happiness, sometimes you are experiencing distress also. The senses are not in action at that time. You have to remember that. In the dream, the mind is active. Senses are not acting. But but what happens is that during the dream time, you are experiencing exactly like you are experiencing in the wake-up condition. Is it not? Everything is happening there. You are experiencing the same happiness, same distress, everything like in the waking conditions. So, waking condition and the dream condition virtually is in the same, in the sense that in dream you are experiencing, but the moment you wake up from the dream, come to the jagrat state or the wakened state, immediately the whole thing collapses there. At the moment, so for example, let me put it this way. Say you have committed a very serious crime in the dream. Imagine like that. You have committed a very, very serious crime. And you have been taken to the court. And the court has given you a punishment for about, say, 20 years. Rigorous imprisonment. Lifelong imprisonment. You have to go to the court. But that imprisonment will only last as long as you are in the dream. Is it not? The moment you wake up from the dream, your imprisonment is over. So the 20 years or so what they have put in there, practically you are not experiencing. Moment you come out of the dream, you start thinking, what have I been enjoying or suffering now? For what was I doing in that dream? Is it not? These thoughts will come and will give you an understanding that in a particular state of existence in this world, Jagral, Sopnam and Sushupti, in whichever state you exist, that only in that particular state you experience that particular activities and the results. You do not take it to the other state. That is the way it is. That Arteshu Avidyavanebi Samsadharna Nivartade. Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit Maharaj, if you understand this principle by waking up from the dream state to the jagrat, to the wake up condition, how you got out of your punishment, the rigorous imprisonment for 20 years. Similarly, in this jagrat state also, till we wake up, at the moment we are also like a dream, it is going on in this world, making big, big plans for whole life. And so many other things we are doing here. Why? Because the dream is strong here as well. Only thing is, in this dream the senses are also helping to enjoy the dream. And while executing this dream, people are asking each other, oh, did you enjoy that? I say, yeah, I enjoyed it very well. And when somebody is suffering, oh, he's suffering all the time, how sad it is. So all this enjoyment, suffering is all based on this ignorance what we have built up. Sudeva Swami says here, Arteshu Avidyamanevi. As long as this ignorance is following you, just like in the dream state, some kind of ignorance has followed you. But the moment you wake up from that ignorance, what happened? You realize that I was a foolish person. What I was experiencing there. Because in the dream state I was experiencing. Similarly, the living entity who is in the Jagrat state today, when he comes out of this and come to self-realization, that's why it's called self-realization. When he realizes the self, he turns back and looks at his Jagrat state, what he has been living here, trying to pay his bills, paying the mortgages, paying this, paying that. And he starts laughing himself. Is that what I was wasting all my lifetime on? These thoughts will come to him at the time when he has woken up from this state of mind, this state of existence to the realized state. That is where that realization comes stronger. So, in order to get this point across, Kapila Vasudeva is supposed to, Lord Kapila says to Devahuti Devi this exactly the same words with a lot of explanations there. For example, where did all this bodily identification come? Bodily identification came sometimes like in the dream, you're thinking, I am a soldier, I am a man, I belong to this country, I belong to this family, I am a father, I am a husband, I am son, I am this, I am that. All kinds of identities I have superimposed on myself. And I am experiencing happiness and distress from that. Krishna says, how can you blame me for this, what you are doing? That is Krishna's question. What do we do? What we do is normally, we come and say to Krishna, Krishna, you have put me into this situation, you have put me into that situation. Krishna is saying, I am not put into any situation. You have created your own situation and you don't want to come out of it. Bhagavad Gita is explaining everything. You don't want to take it. You don't want to learn anything from Bhagavad Gita. All you want to do is read Bhagavad Gita once a year and close it and offer it to a few people and that's it. But what's written in the Bhagavad Gita, if you don't take it seriously, how can things change? That is why most important thing is, Krishna has given so much importance to this knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, so that people can understand why they are suffering. To the moment, we don't know why we are suffering. We are thinking that, oh, this has happened due because Krishna is not happy with me. And definitely, I have, sometimes we make all kinds of excuses. And Krishna is standing there and smiling at us. When we go to him with all our complaints, what does he do? He stands there and smiles at you. Isn't it? Is it very nice when somebody comes to you with all the problems, you start smiling at him? I know it is not very nice to smile at somebody. He is coming in full distress. And the Krishna is standing there and smiling. Then you start thinking, what kind of God is this? Who is always taking things in a very cheap way. I am suffering so much in my life. I am suffering in my mind. I am suffering in my body. Actually, the whole dream is such that Maya's powerful message of Maya is such. Atesha vidyamanebi samsardir na nivartade. You will not get out of this samsara material existence. Sudeva Goswami says to Parikshit, unless this knowledge is properly established in the mind. That's why it's so important to study Bhagavad Gita stage by stage, everything in the Bhagavad Gita. It should deeply penetrate into one's consciousness and then one can see the whole drama that is going on in this world. He doesn't get disturbed by this. He doesn't get disturbed by this. So that's why Krishna has repeated many things. And if you analyze this way, you will notice so many interesting things in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. That dhyayato vishayanasya sapno anarthagama yatham. That dhyayato vishayanasya, everything, who is doing it actually? Mind is doing it. For example, when you sleep, sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night and a lot of thoughts come one after the other, isn't it? Lot of different kinds, sometimes good thoughts, sometimes bad thoughts, mostly bad thoughts. 95% is good thoughts is only when you are getting some memory of Krishna or the spiritual master. That's the only time when you get some good thoughts, but that's a very rare thing. Most of us is simply misery that comes in. So when these bad thoughts come, actually what's happening is, you are not experiencing anything. It is a lot of fear that is brought in by the thoughts, which is called the mind. As I mentioned before, what is mind? Mind is nothing but a huge quantity of thoughts coming one after the other. And then it multiplies inside. And then you are lying there in the bed thinking about it. What shall I do now? I got this problem. I got that problem. I got so many problems. All the problems of this world, I keep it in myself and I'm suffering from that. Even the senses have not got into the situation. They are experiencing anything or suffering anything. But still, even though the senses are not engaged in the activities, you are still suffering. Are they not? Why is it? Because the mind has taken the initiative to go there and to drag you along with it. So unless you fight this mind with full strength, this will continue. This will continue. It is with this purpose. Krishna spoke that sixth chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhyana Yogam. Krishna says forcibly you have to get this mind under control. There is no other way. And that is the easiest process. For us devotees, Krishna Prabhupada says, you chant the holy name of Krishna. Because Dhyana Yogam is a difficult process. And it is so difficult that unless one has such a discipline in life, it is impractical in the age of Kali. And therefore, we have this easiest process also of chanting the holy name. If you simply chant Krishna's holy names, Krishna will get your mind under control. You cannot control your own mind. It's not possible. That we'll see why it is not possible. It says like that in the Bhagavad Gita. So, seeing all these things, from the Kadhamanishad you can understand. Kadhamanishad tells you only this important thing. That the, because Upanishad's language is like that. I mentioned this before. Often people when they read Bhagavad Gita, they get confused sometimes. Why different processes are explained like this?
like all of us, Arjuna also wanted only one answer. He says, tell me what I should do. Don't tell me all these different yogas and this, that and the other and confuse me like this. Arjuna said the same thing to Krishna, like we also say the same thing. We read chapter after chapter. And then we start thinking, if this is not important, why did Krishna say, talk about it? Karma sannyasam he is talking about. Then he is saying karma yogam is better than karma sannyasam. If karma yogam is better than karma sannyasam, he should have only spoken to me karma yogam. Why he has spoken about karma sannyasam? So this seems to me that Krishna is not in a good teacher. He is not able to present things properly. He has confused everything. No, it is not like that. There is a reason behind all these things. Why it is spoken like that? By nature itself, every one of us are different. We all have different mind within us. And our mentality and our way of thinking, everything changes. We must not take it for granted everyone is the same. Everyone is not the same. Because our vasanas, what is inside, what we have brought in from our previous lifetimes, and what the association of the modes of nature we had in this lifetime, would have generated different kinds of vasanas inside. And that vasanas will control you all the time. And you have no freedom to come out of it. And these vasanas, they are ready to sprout. They are ready to take birth or take shape. As soon as the opportunity arises for the senses to interact with the sense objects, vasana says, I am ready now. I am ready now. And there is one word Krishna has used in the Bhagavad Gita called sankalpam. Sankalpam means, it is a difficult terminology to explain. Sankalpam basically means that different plans what you are making in your mind all the time. Sankalpam and vikalpam, these are the two activities of the mind. When the senses, when the vasanas and the senses goes into sense objects and reports back to the mind that such and such a sense enjoyment is very pleasant for me, the mind starts immediately, comparison starts there between this, or what is called as sankalpam and vikalpam comes in there. Acceptance and rejection of the particular sense enjoyment. It all happens very quickly inside. For example, when I'm walking through the street, I see a billboard there or some advertisement. As soon as I look, what happens? Immediately the eye is in contact with the sense object. It's already sent the messages to the mind. Mind has already processed it and tells the intelligence what should I do. And the intelligence is decided. It happens in such a fast pace, much more than even a Pentium 4 or whatever it is. Processing is so fast that immediately the decision is taken. Yes, that is something I should look at. And I should enjoy that. Or I don't want to look at. This decision is taken by, at that point, with the help of the intelligence. So you see how this processor is going on inside. Such a powerful processor. And that it is working well. Who is working behind it? Who is maintaining this processor? Yeah. And there is the support system working further inside, which is the soul. And Krishna is telling us every now and then, look, you are carrying on in this world because my part and parcel is inside. That's what keeping it going. And we on the other hand rejects all that. And we run after something else, which has not really any sense at all, in any way, significant way. So, from here, we have to remember that Krishna is taking us to a point to understand that the acceptance and rejection of the mind is an important thing. And if this thing called the mind, unless it is brought under control, we will not be able to progress further in spiritual life. So, in order to bring this point, I will just go back to Bhagavad Gita a little bit more, because we did not discuss these things in depth and it will cause problems when we go further later in the Bhagavad Gita. So, at the end of 5th chapter, if you look at the end of 5th chapter, there Krishna talked about three different things, what one has to do. I'll tell you the verses. It's in the 26, verse 26. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is a very interesting book. If you get a feel for the book and you start thinking what an amount of knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita to live in this world and how important it is to absorb this knowledge inside. And if you start practically applying that in one's own life to extend what one can, you will see a remarkable difference what you gain from that. It's not only a textbook, pure purely for spiritual life. It's even for how to live a life in this world. Bhagavad Gita can guide a person. Text 26 says, Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatachetasam abhido brahma nirvanam vartade vididalpanam. Kama krodha vimuktanam. Krishna is talking about a person who is advancing on the spiritual life through spiritual knowledge. So, knowledge is one thing, what you can acquire from books, isn't it? Suppose you go to library, pull out all the transcendental literature and start reading through it day after day after day. All that knowledge will come in. But knowledge is one thing, but realization is something different. Knowledge, when it is realized, that is when that knowledge starts working for the person. Otherwise, it will stay simply in the head. It will not have any practical impact on the person. He'll be studying all the same time, he'll be lamenting also about the life. He'll be saying that Krishna has done this to me, Krishna has done that to me. So, why does that happen? Because this knowledge what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, he has not applied to himself in his day-to-day life. He has not accepted it. There, he is driven by his own senses and the mind. And on the other hand, he has taken the effort to study all these things. This problem is always there in spiritual life. All of us have the same problem. That is why I was explaining that story of Rahugana. Remember the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, we spoke about Rahugana last Sunday. Why I was saying that was, this King Rahugana, a great personality, he has studied everything, but he has no realization. And he goes to Jadabharata and talking to him, that as though as a learned person. You see? And when he starts speaking like this, Jadabharata thought whether I should talk to him. He realized, yes, I should talk to him, because the problem with this person is he is completely absorbed in the bodily concept of life. He has knowledge, but he has not succeeded in applying it to his own life. Therefore he is suffering. So if I can help him, it's not a bad thing. So I decided to talk to him. So there you will notice this thing, what has happened is this. That in this particular verse Krishna is saying here, Kama krodha vimuktanam, that is means control of the senses. That's what it means, control of the senses. Yatinam yatachetasam, yatinam yatachetasam, which is the chetas is mind. So in order that the knowledge what you have acquired from the books, in order that knowledge to manifest in oneself, one has to do three things. What are they? Control of the senses, control of the mind, and control of the intelligence. If these things are brought under control, then the knowledge, what you have acquired from the books, will start slowly manifesting in a person. Otherwise, it will not. This is what Krishna is trying to explain there. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatache yatasam abhido brahma nirvanam vartade vididalpanam. Otherwise, it is not going to happen. Krishna is saying, those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme, in the way, in the very near future. So, liberation is possible for a person who is going in that route. Otherwise, it's impossible. Then, in the verses 27 and 28, Krishna has spoken about the different processes by which one can go through that system. That, because basically Krishna was preparing himself for the next chapter. It is kind of a preparation for the next chapter has already started in these verses from 26 to the last chapter 29. Ultimately Krishna had to tell Arjuna very bluntly one thing. Arjuna, if you don't inquire about yourself, which is the self-realization, knowledge of the self, if that does not happen, no matter what I talk to you, it is not going to have any effect. It's not going to have any effect. Because you are not doing what you are asked to do. And therefore, Krishna says in that last verse, if you'll notice there, that try to understand your own identity. What is your true identity as spirit soul? So Krishna is encouraging Arjuna to go in that direction. How to know your own self. If you don't know your own self, all this talking doesn't help. Talking doesn't help. And once you know the self, what you are, then your approach to life, attitude in life, and your understanding of life will also change, because everything is different when you understand yourself. So, bhoktaram yajnadavasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. So സുഹൃതം സർവഭൂതാനാം ജ്ഞാത്വാമാം ശാന്തി മൃച്ഛതി. വെരി ഇമ്പോർട്ടന്റ് വേഴ്സസ് ഭഗവത്ഗീത ആൻഡ് ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം. ഇഫ് ദാറ്റ് ബിക്കംസ് ദ ഗൈഡിംഗ് ഫോഴ്സ് ഇൻ ലൈഫ്, ദാറ്റ് ക്യാൻ എലിവേറ്റ് എ പേഴ്സൺ സ്പിരിച്വലി സോ വെൽ ദാറ്റ് യു വിൽ സീ വെൻ ഐ വിൽ ടോക്ക് അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ് ലിറ്റിൽ ലേറ്റർ. ഭോക്താരം യജ്ഞതപസം സർവലോകമഹേശ്വരം. കൃഷ്ണ സെയിങ് ദയർ ദാറ്റ് ഇഫ് യു perform your activities in this world as a yajnam, as a sacrifice to me, I realizing that all your activities are meant to please me, Krishna. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam, all the work what you do has to be become a yajnam. Yajnam means a sacrifice, isn't it? Yajnam means a sacrifice, and tapasa means austerities. So sacrifices and austerities, when you are executing them with the understanding that Krishna is the enjoyer and this is performed to please Krishna, you know, with the understanding to please Krishna, then Krishna says, I will be your friend. Only then you will be your friend. Don't think that Krishna is always sitting there as a friend for me and I'll go and tell everything what I want and I'll do what I like. That does not work. That Krishna has also made it very clear. If you want to follow the process, you have to follow what Krishna says. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam. Yajnam and tapas, if it is done for pleasing Krishna, then sarvaloka maheshwaram, because I am the benefactor of the whole creation, for the whole planetary systems, I am the controller. Then what will happen? Sukhradam sarvabhudanam. I will become your friend. Or not only yours, all the living entities, Krishna says. With the result of that will, jnatvamam shantimrachari. You will become peaceful in life. You will come to that state of realization or liberation. To that state you will arrive there. Krishna closed the fifth chapter with this particular verse. With this particular verse, Krishna has closed the fifth chapter. There is a few things to point out here. If you look Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find a certain philosophy present by Vedavyas in a particular pattern. I have told about this before, that first thing in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about Karma Yoga, isn't it? Karma Yoga. Because Krishna knows that the tendency of the living entity is to engage in karma, isn't it? We all have the propensity for karma. Karma is what we do every day, and every day when we are awake, we are absorbed in karma. As soon as you get up in the morning, it starts, the mind starts saying, do this, do that, do this, do that. Like that it goes on. Till you go to bed the last minute when everything is finished, you go to sleep, till the last moment, what are we doing? You're only doing one thing. What is that? Karma. So karma is an integral part of us. And if this karma that is in us, rajodigaha, karma paraha, Brahma's creation, nobody can do anything about it. This is the nature in us to do this or that or something. If this karma is not controlled properly, without knowing what we are doing it for and how we should do it, if you do things, what will happen is, it will become karma brandha. Karma brandha means madness. Madness of karma. I don't know whether you have noticed, I have noticed many times karma brandha in people. They will work 24 hours. Work. No thinking further. It's like the horse which has got its, on the sides. Not looking this and that side. Absorbed in the work. And they think this is the success of life. They come to the conclusion that I'm doing this from the day I started breathing, the last minute I go to the intensive care unit, I'll do this. Nothing else. This is my... And he's thinking that I'm acting properly. Actually, the whole thing is madness. Such a madness that he's running around the whole world get to satisfy his senses. That's what he's doing. Because he has no knowledge of anything what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. He's thinking satisfying the senses and the mind is my prime duty by performing this ugra karma morning to night, one after the other. And that person, what is his future? What is his future? Sometimes you get to see them in action. When you see them, they have no time to talk to you. They have no time, they don't want to hear anything because they've already fixed up in their mind, this is the way to go. There's no further thinking. They never take time to read Bhagavad Gita or understand what Krishna is saying about karma. The powerful karma, how it should be handled. And the person in knowledge, he will act with proper understanding. That is why knowledge is necessary. If one has no knowledge, what will happen? One will do all sorts of things in life. And then, when everything gets into a mess, after working 30, 40 years, worked very hard. Some people say like that, isn't it? They say, I worked all my life, paid all the taxes, looked after my family, and look at me, what has happened to me now. No, who you should blame for this? How can you blame Krishna for this? Because you have not understood anything what Krishna has spoken about. You have just done what you want to do, and at the end complaining to Krishna about everything, what he has done wrong. So what can you do? This is why Bhagavad Gita is saying again and again, act with knowledge, act with understanding in this world. What is binding, what is not binding. So karmam has two sides. Either it becomes karma yogam or it becomes karma bhranda, madness of karma. And majority, 99% is karma bhranda, what is going on in this world. And there's nothing we can do about it. That bhranda will go on till the last minute. Madness. Bhranda means madness. So here, Krishna starts with karma yogam. Tells Arjuna, Arjuna understands this first, the principle of karma, how to act in this world. Without keeping me in the picture, if you act independently, you reap the results yourself. That is why in karma yogam, two things are mentioned, kartratvam and bhoktratvam. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. These two things have to go. When things are done to please Krishna, according to Krishna's instructions, if things are done, that is why it's such an important factor in life that if one does not offer one results to Krishna, and if one does not follow this principle of giving the ownership to Krishna, Krishna is engaging me in a particular activity, Krishna is engaging me to do this. If that principle is not completely understood, then one has to pay heavy price for it. This is the way Karma Yoga is working. Majority of the modern world does not have any hope in that sense. Because from the very early days it is informed, told, the person is told, that you should work for it. You should work hard. Work is this, work is that. All kinds of falsities are being introduced to him. And he works. He works like a bull. Whole life he is working without any knowledge in his head. What does karma mean? So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna started with karma yogam, knowing very well that we all have this problem with karma. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you take, what does Krishna start with Srimad Bhagavatam? Krishna, in the Sukadeva Goswami, starts the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto. First canto and second canto, is strictly speaking, has come due to some different reasons. Strictly speaking, Srimad Bhagavatam begins from the third canto. The first canto is called Adhikari Skantham, one who is qualified to study Srimad Bhagavatam. And the second canto is the one Sadhana Skandham, or the person who executes what kind of sadhana one should execute. So Adhikari Skandham and Sadhana Skandham, as it is called, the first and second canto, if you leave that, strictly speaking, Srimad Bhagavatam starts with Vidura and Maitreya conversing each other in Haridwar, isn't it? Vidura Maitreya conversation is where the discussion begins, Srimad Bhagavatam. As soon as the third canto begins, Krishna brings one important incarnation there. Sukadeva Goswami spoke about Varaha incarnation there, is it not? Varaha incarnation comes in the third canto. Why? What is the reason behind it? Reason is, as soon as Varahamurti appeared in this world, all the great sages came there and they saw Lord Varaha. When they saw Lord Varaha, what thoughts came to their mind? Sages can see things much more deeper than what we can see. The sages' vision was such, they saw one thing very clearly, that this Varahamurti was addressed as Yajna Varahamurti, Yajna, or sacrifices. Varahamurti personified in the form of a boar, he has come, who? Krishna has come in the form of a boar to teach us how to execute Yajna or sacrifice. Or in other words, the life is meant for sacrifice. Whether you, through Bhagavad Gita or through Srimad Bhagavatam, if you go, if the activities in this world are not sacrificed, offered to Krishna, if the activities are not tied up with Krishna, then those activities has to give you pain, has to give misery to you at the end. That is the fact. So, Yajna Varaham, or the boar incarnation, boar on its own is not a very pleasant animal to look at, is it? If you look at the boar, you see sometimes in so many places boars, when you see them, is this form Krishna wanted to take? You start thinking, don't you? What an incarnation he has found a body to accept. We will rather prefer to see the beautiful peacock feather and the walking around in Vrindavanam with the flute in the hand and the butter, stealing butter from the gopi. That is a much more attractive form. But this form Krishna has taken for one reason, that when the boar in itself is not a very pleasant animal. Just like karmam in itself is binding. It's not very pleasant to execute karmam in this world because it is binding. So it's not pleasant. But when the boar become a yajna varaham, like all the hair in the body of the varahamurti, it is there in the prayers, you can see in the Bhagavatam. Then all the prayer, all the hair on the body of the varahamurti, when the sages looked at the body, they realized it was representing the kushagras which is meant for the sacrifice. You see, this only the sages can see. We can't see. We will only see the external body. The sages were able to think further and think why Krishna has taken this form and come. He wanted to establish the sacrifices at that point itself. So Yajnavarahamurti form he appeared, and different limbs of the body are the different tools what they use in the sacrifice. Like they call it as Sruk and Sravam, which are the tools they use for performing the sacrifices. Different limbs in the body were compared to that. There is a whole list of comparison in the Bhagavatam referring to this between the sages discussion each other and they listing, analyzing the body of the Varahamurti and pointing out each of these parts in relationship with what in the sacrifice. So sacrifice or yajnam is what keeps in this world. Yajnavai Vishnu. Vishnu is nothing but sacrifice. It is through sacrifice Krishna gets pleased. And that's why you mentioned here, Bhoktaram yajnadavasam sarvaloga maheshwaram sukhradam sarvabhudanam yatvamam shantim ruchyati. If one wants peaceful happiness in life, and if we want to come to that platform, one has to come to this understanding to change the human life into a yajnam, into a sacrifice. So it is with this purpose, that Krishna consciousness was to be executed. If Krishna consciousness is not executed on these principles, simply thinking that I will have a good time in Krishna consciousness and I will offer my obeisances, I will call everybody a Prabhu, I will surrender to everyone, anyone I see, but I won't do what I am supposed to do. And then I am thinking that I will be in Vaikuntha, I make a quick run through my life and get out of it. Krishna says, you can forget it. It's not going to happen. It is in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is very clearly telling this, that unless a life is a sacrifice to Krishna, there is that Bhoktaram yajnadavasam sarvaloga maheshwaram sukhradam sarvabhudanam yatvamam shantim ruchyateem. So you will find somewhere that people only want to take from Bhagavad Gita what suits them. What they want, they'll take it. They use these words only to say to people, oh, Krishna is everybody's friend, Prabhu. So if you just take Krishna's shelter, everything will be alright. You don't have to do anything more than that. Because Krishna says here, sukhradam sarvabhudanam. He is a friend of every living entity and you will be peaceful with that. But first two lines, he doesn't want to take it seriously. He just ignores that. Bhoktaram yajnadavasam sarvaloga maheshwaram, that's not important. Sukhradam sarvabhudanam, I got a nice friend in Krishna who is always there to listen to me when I ask him to do something. So what do I need more than that? This is the perception in many minds of the people, that they'll come to the temple with the understanding that when they have a lot of distress, I'll go and tell Krishna all my distress because he's my friend. He's standing there. So he's also standing there and laughing, smiling at us, listening our sincerity. He can see much more deeper than what we can see about ourselves. So this is the difficulty. So what happens is that Krishna spoke all these things. Many, many things in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita are very closely related. As I mentioned, the third chapter of Karma Yoga, third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam are very closely connected. Because both begins with this philosophy of karma, Karma Yoga, or yajnam, to be performed. In the ancient tradition of the Vedas, the description is based on the sacrifices. Krishna has made it in the Bhagavad Gita much more accessible to us through the process of Karma Yoga. Because Krishna says to Arjuna, that karmam yogam which was mentioned in the Vedas has become difficult to execute in the age of Kali. It is not possible. Who can sit there and chant the whole day the Vedic hymns and pour the ghee into the fire? Nobody has the time. So Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are very relevant to our life today. It's not something that's been spoken 5,000 years and it's gone. No. In every single day in life, it can get you a better understanding that what one should do and how one should conduct oneself. So these ideas are from Bhagavad Gita. And when one identifies with Bhagavad Gita, philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, one can see a lot of things what goes wrong in this world, how things have gone wrong, how fallen people are from the understanding of spiritual life. They have taken to some process in the name of religion, and that is not satisfying them. When it's not satisfying, what do? They take it upon somebody else. And then the fight starts. So all this has come from lack of proper knowledge of Krishna consciousness, explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So this is why it is so important. So when we go through this, we will notice so many interesting things there. That in two or three chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, second and third, and after second chapter is called Contents of the Bhagavad Gita Summarized, the summary of the Bhagavad Gita. As soon as he finished that, third, fourth and fifth, Krishna utilizes exclusively for explaining what is karma means. Karma and the impact of karma, how to handle karma, different kinds of karma. From every angle, Krishna is looking at karma and explaining to us about that. And immediately after that, Krishna talks a bit about jnanam, about knowledge also. Now, why it has been spoken like that? Because if one executes karma as it is discussed in the third, fourth and fifth chapter, automatically that will purify a person. Purifying within is necessary before one can have jnanam. Knowledge won't come and knowledge won't manifest inside. All this knowledge what we are studying from literature, it's not clicking. It's not clicking inside. We'll study it and as soon as we close the book and leave it, that's finished there. And then we carry on, you know, just like the dog who has its tail. It's always bent, isn't it? You put a pipe on it. 1,000 years you put it. Take out the pipe, the tail goes back into the same position. This is our mind. Mind is like that. Why? Because it hasn't affected me. All that I've been reading in the literature, oh, Krishna is very nice, he has given all these things. But after that, finished, Krishna is gone. Then you are on your own way, doing things. So that's no good. So Krishna is saying here, that karma shuddhi has to happen. Purification of one's own karma has to happen. Has to happen. And in order to that to happen, one has to follow the process of karma yoga. So through that process, and it happens, simultaneously, if one is cultivating knowledge, that knowledge will start working in a person. Immediately it will have its impact. No question about that. There is no more doubt after that. There is no doubting Bhagavad Gita and Krishna after that, because process is working. There is no question of doubting after that. So Krishna is saying there, that if you follow this process, in due course of time, karma shuddhi will turn into jnanam. Jnana will develop into vairagyam. Vairagyam renunciation will automatically happen. All this external world, what today you consider as so important, and for which you are struggling day and night to keep it going, thinking that I have this responsibility, I have that responsibility, I do this, do that. So many things, falsities have developed inside and unable to come out of it. And as long as you are caught up in that mess, it will be very hard to understand the process of karma yoga and also the process of jnanam. So Krishna has spoken about that in that few chapters, and sometimes we also have wrong approach about these things. Sometimes I have seen parents saying to the children that you should be fearful of Krishna, you know, you should be fearful of God. They say God fearing, isn't it? That's the word they used. You nowhere in the Bhagavad Gita you find Krishna is telling us to be frightened of him. Nowhere once Krishna has said that you should be frightened of me. On the other hand, we shouldn't tell children that there is somebody sitting up there who is watching you all the time and you should be frightened of him. If you develop like this fear in his mind, he is going to school and he is studying science also. And science is telling there is no such thing in the sky. Nobody is sitting there, he says. Then he comes back and tells the mother, you told me that you will be frightened of somebody, and science is telling me there is no one there. I don't think you have any, you are just trying to frighten me by using me like this, or trying to keep me under control in this way, and his whole job is finished then. Afterwards, there is no further spiritual life. Spiritual life is finished. Why? Because you have trained him up in the wrong way. Krishna is not saying to be frightened of him. Krishna is saying, through knowledge approach me. That is why, sarva loka maheshwaram sukhritam sarva bhudanam. I am your friend. And one has to know that friendship with Krishna, how to establish that spiritual life. When one establishes that relationship with Krishna properly, that is spiritual life. Sukhritam sarva bhudanam yatvamam shantim ruchadi. That will bring peace, that will bring happiness. So in that way, Krishna concluded that particular verse, and that was the preparation for the sixth chapter. Now let's look at the few verses in the sixth chapter, because they are very important. They are in relationship with the mind. And as I mentioned before, mind is our biggest friend as well as the enemy. And we'll come to that. So, in the first verse itself, Krishna talks about who is a sannyasi, isn't it? Sannyasi, who is sannyasi, Krishna says in the sixth chapter. In the beginning of sixth chapter, if you notice the first chapter, first verse itself, Krishna says, Anashrita karma phalam Shri Bhagavan uvacham Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma garodiya sa sannyasi cha yogija na niragnir na chakriyaha. Now, there are a few things to understand from that verse. Na niragnir na chakriya. Two things. First one, Agni. What is Agni? Agni means, in the Vedic tradition, Brahmanas are supposed to burn the Agni at home. It is called Agniadhanam. And those, almost all the Brahmanas, they have to have this Agni burning at home. And there is a special facility provided for that, and that will burn all the time. And there are different Agnis also, different fires. Dakshina Agni, Ahavini Agni, Prajavati Agni. Three different kinds of fires are explained in the Shastrams. And they all have three different purposes also. If you go in that, discussing that will take a long time. So we'll stick to our main important point here. So this Agni, how far one should keep it going? And similarly, activity is Kriya also, to how far one should control. At this point, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, that if you have understood that sannyasam means what? Sannyasam means giving up, isn't it? That is what sannyasam means. Sannyasam, the way sannyasam is given is a very interesting process. In the olden days, many, many people took sannyas, and that was quite common. And the way of sannyasam was given is also very important to know how it was given. What was the understanding of the person who gave sannyas, and what was the understanding of the person who took sannyas? These things we have to know. Sannyasam is not just carrying a danda and changing into saffron clothes and thou become a sannyasi today. You don't become a sannyasi like that. Sa sannyasi cha yogi cha na niragnir na chakriyaha. Krishna says, the first thing what makes a person sannyasi is that one has learned to give up all the sankalpam in his mind. All these calculations in his mind. This is good, this is bad, this is what I will do today, this is what I will reject. All this has come from the material calculations. A sannyasi is a friend of the whole world. He cannot think in terms of community. He cannot identify himself in terms of one country. He cannot identify himself with one family. No, he has finished all that. The relationship with the family, the society, the community, the country, everything is finished for a sannyasi. That is where all the sankalpams have gone. This understanding of my community, my family, my this, my that, is only because of the bodily attachment, isn't it? But if you come to the sannyasi platform, one has to be completely free from all these bodily conceptions and perceptions in one's own mind. If he has not come to that stage, he has not attained sannyasam. That is the verdict in the Shastram. That is why in the olden days, many times, they will wait till the last minute because they know they have not freed themselves from that. They are not ready for that proper sannyasi situation. So, sasannyasi incha yogincha na niragnirna chakriya. So one who has given up this fire, lighting the fire, or activities in this world, he is considered to be a sannyasi. Krishna says, no, he is not a sannyasi. Sannyasi is one. Krishna's definition is always different. You must remember that. In Thuvat Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, you will find what we morally judge people. That's not how Krishna sees. Krishna's conception of truthfulness is different than what we call it as truth. Our truthfulness has no meaning. It's all what it suits according to the time, circumstances. Krishna's truthfulness is different. The definition of truthfulness from Krishna's side is different. What does Krishna say about truthfulness? Krishna says about truthfulness, satyam cha samadarshanam. Samadarshanam means seeing in every living entity as a part and parcel of Krishna. If you are seeing like that, you are truthful. Otherwise, you are not truthful. This is what Krishna is saying. We say, for example, we say, oh, that person is very honest man. He's a very truthful person. I mentioned this to you. The truth is such a thing. How you see, from where you see things. For example, when you are in this planet, In the morning the sun is rising and even the evening sun is setting, isn't it? So this is a truth as far as this world is concerned. It's a permanent truth. When you are situated in this planet, it's a permanent truth. As long as you go into the sun planet, is this a truth anymore? Sun doesn't set, sun doesn't rise anymore, is that? So the sunrise and sunset is conditioned by the time, place and circumstances in which you are located. As soon as you come out of that and you have freed yourself from the these conditions, you see truth in a different way. That is not truth. That is the change of Vyavahariya Satyam, as it is called in the Shastram. Shastram has analyzed all these things in a very beautiful way. It's called Vyavahariya. Vyavahariya means only for transactions. Vyavaharam, you can use it. All these kind of truth. All our statements in this world, when we certify, oh, somebody is very truthful and honest and all that, it's only limited to his transactions in this world. Otherwise, he is not truthful. He is only truthful, Krishna says, Satyam cha samadarshanam. Only if he is seeing Krishna's parts and parcel in every living entity. He is not differentiating between one to another, saying that he is my friend, he is my enemy. Actually, nobody is your friend and nobody is your enemy also. Unfortunately, I have got all these false conceptions in my mind. And thinking like that and acting on that platform, that is worse. So, one who has gone in that direction, he is not truthful, even if he is a sannyasi. That's what one has to remember. Satyam cha samadarshanam. He has to see every living entity in this world equally. And everyone is on a spiritually, they are the same. It's a spirit soul. They are not the body. But that realization hasn't come to him. So therefore he is not truthful. So like this, Krishna spoke about that. So here, in this verse you will see that Krishna has explained in the next coming one or two verses also some important points. Krishna says there, that if you have not given this sangalpam, sangalpam means this comparison between good and bad, the dundvam or dualities of this world, you are not going to be a yogi or a sannyasi. Krishna calls by different names, sannyasi, yogi, all as far as Krishna is concerned are all on the same path. Yogi is following one path, sannyasi is following another path. So sannyasam has to be taken when one has come to that platform, and then his sannyasam will be perfect. That sannyasi won't fall because he has reached the right platform, right situation. And in order to, what is actually holding you back in come to that state is the bodily concept of life, isn't it? Identification with the body from which you are struggling very hard to get out from there. This is our biggest problem, this identification with the body. And no matter theoretically how much you understand, still as soon as it comes to practical application, we are not able to follow that rule anymore. We are driven by the, very much by the laws of this world or what is done by the society. So Krishna did something in the Bhagavatam to prove this. Did you know that Krishna has given sannyas to people? I don't know whether you have heard that. Krishna used to give sannyas to people. Sometimes Krishna has also given sannyas. Only thing is, it's not mentioned like that, that Krishna is giving sannyas. But actually what Krishna has done is, Krishna has also given sannyas. Normally, when sannyas is given to somebody, the system in the olden days was that he has gone through the Brahmachari ashram, Grihastha ashram and Vanaprastha ashram. And particularly Vanaprastha ashram is a very hard ashram. We have discussed that in the 7th canto, when Prahlad Maharaj's story after that, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Srinarada Maharshi, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we discussed that, what all the stringent lifestyle of a Vanaprastha ashrami. Vanaprastham is a very hard time, where one has to go through very rigorous lifestyle. Eating is concerned, sleeping is concerned, the control of the senses completely, that is the goal of the Vanaprastha ashram. After that, after executing Vanaprastha ashram, a stage will come when one has no more attachment to the body. He has completely freed himself from that. More or less you can say that the bodily concept of life is gone. And then you can take sannyas after that. This is where you take sannyas. So here Krishna is saying that by now all this profit and loss, today we are calculating all the time what is there in for me, what's loss, what's profit, and what's beneficial for me, what's not beneficial. Why all this? Because I identified with my body. That's why I need all these kind of calculations all the time, isn't it? So every step in life today, particularly in householder ashram, this is what's going on. about the profits and loss, what one is making in life. But as soon as one comes to vanaprastham, one has pushed this back behind, left behind in life, and then he has come to higher understanding where he is seeing that. That is why it's called aranyakam. Aranyakam means one who lives in the forest at that time, with very tight control on eating and also on sleeping and also clothing. Everything, and sleeping in very difficult conditions. So if you execute like that, these senses, which are very hard to control otherwise, comes under control in due course. So when from vanaprastha ashram, when one comes to sannyasa ashram, the system was, the person from whom you took sannyas, you approach him at the time when you are ready. By now they would have spoken to each other that he would have agreed to give you sannyas, and you would have asked him to give you sannyas, because he would have already checked your credibility, that you have come to that level of realization. By talking to you, he will find out whether you are in that platform qualified to take sannyas. So what will happen is, the person who gives sannyasam, he is sitting there, and this person who wants to take sannyas, he comes walking to him. At that time, he only wears a kaupin, just a brahmachari underwear. That's all he wears, nothing else. There is no clothing in the body, just that alone he wears. And he comes up to him, and he pays his obeisances, and explains to him that he has now completed his vanaprastha ashram, and he is ready to accept his sannyas ashram. At that time, the person who gives sannyas hands over him a new set of clothes, a dhoti, he hands it over to him. The saffron dhoti is handed over to him at that point. And also the sannyasa mantram, is initiation into sannyasam, is given to him. So when he walks to the person who gives sannyas, he explains his situation and he walks back from there. When he is walking back, he is called back by that person, and that is when the sannyasam is offered to him. That is when the sannyasam is offered to him. This is the system in the olden days. That's how the sannyasam was offered. So you can see, it is not something very cheap we can make out of it. That sannyasam is a very high stage of consciousness, more than anything else. Renunciation, detachment, knowledge, devotion, so many things absorbed, involved in that. And when he's called back and given this sannyas, this dhoti is the symbol of that taking sannyasam. The new saffron dhoti is offered, and the danda is offered, sannyasa mantram is also offered. He takes it, and then he says goodbye to the whole world. He's finished with everything. He has nothing to do with this family, this country, this society. Loka samasta, the whole world is his world. The whole world is his home. He has to cannot discriminate between one living entity and the other. These were the very high principles what the sages held in the spiritual life. And that is why Vedic philosophy, even after so many years, you cannot crush it. You cannot crush it. Because the underlying principles of Vedic philosophy are so sound that without we coming to that, we will not understand what is spiritual life. This is the beauty of that. So, here, what's happened is, when the gopis pray to Krishna, what did Krishna, gopis pray to Krishna? Kartyayini Mahavai, Mahayogini Adhishwari, Nandagopasudam Devi, Padime Kurude Nama. Srimad Bhagavatam, you can read this. They are addressing Kartyayini, Mahamaye, Mahayogini, Adhishwari. Different mantras in the Sahasranam, Leda Sahasranam, and the Vedas, they are repeating it. Those names they have used. And the young girls of Vrindavanam, the gopis, they were praying to to Durga Devi, to Kartyayini. Kartyayini Mahamaye, Mahayogini Adhishwari. That if you want, you can provide, fulfill our desire, isn't it? That is what the gopis have prayed. We have discussed that in the 10th canto, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nanda Gopa Sudam Devi Padime Kurude Nama. Please bring Nanda Maharaj's son Krishna as our dear husband. All the girls together, they pray to Kartyayini, to Durga Devi. That's what they prayed, isn't it? 41 days they had their Kartik Vratam, or the fasting. And you can read that in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, how they executed that. They used to come to the river, Yamuna River, and they bathed in the river. They built one deity of Kartyayini with the sand, and they did the deity worship every day and floated the deity in the water later on. And they cooked different offerings, offered it to the deity. So they were all praying to Kartyayini for help, right? So when they were praying, what was their state of mind? material desire, isn't it? It was very much, they didn't know who Krishna was. As Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no idea about anything else. All that wanted was, they wanted to have Krishna as their husband. Very much the material way of the approach in what we have in this world. So the approach was very much like that. There was no knowledge, and also, when they were inside the water, they had no clothes either. They have kept all the clothes on the tree, isn't it? They hung it up there. And they were underneath the water, they were inside the water bathing. And when they heard the flute being played from the top of the river, they looked. And they saw Krishna there, sitting there, with the all the clothes nicely organized, set up, and sitting there and playing the flute. Gopis looked at each other. And they didn't know what to do. This was the last day. And they started talking to each other. One of them said to the other, why don't you go and ask him for the clothes? So the girl says to the other one, why don't you ask? Why are you asking me to do it? The usual, you know, the way things happen. Everybody will tell the other to do. They won't do themselves. So this was happening. So eventually, Krishna said to them, come here, each one of you. Pay your obeisances here first. Why was that asked? Reason for that is, Krishna wanted them to come out of their bodily concept of life. When you are identifying with the body, you are not ready for sannyas. Isn't it? If you are identifying with the body like a cat or a dog, and thinking that I am this body, and I am this, I am that, then what kind of sannyasam is that? That's useless. So Krishna wanted to clarify that. Proper sannyasam is like this. First, come out of the bodily concept of life. And for the gopis at that moment, Krishna wanted them to come out of the bodily concept of life by paying their obeisances to him without the clothes on. Krishna managed that far. And after that, Krishna says, here is your sannyasi clothes now, you can have it. Handed over the clothes to the gopis at that time. This is one instance when Krishna has given sannyas to the gopis. Because basically what Krishna has done is, from that day onwards, the gopis have not looked back again. They saw their attachment for Krishna has increased to such an extent from then on, that you will find throughout the 10th canto, remaining part of Srimad Bhagavatam, gopis' relationship with Krishna was on a devotee's basis, purely on a devotional mode. They have not anymore thought about, because that sannyasam concept has gone into the gopis' mind from Krishna's this particular pastime. It is not simply stories in the Bhagavatam if you read. That alone is not sufficient. There is so many underlying thoughts behind it. And through stories, Vedavyasa Maharshi is bringing us to the point to understand that what is so important, the underlying spiritual principles involved in that. And similarly, you will notice, it is not only in the Bhagavad Gita, as I mentioned before, although Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago in the battlefield, when you start analyzing it through the mind, intelligence, the soul, and the activities of the mind, what Krishna has discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, you can see they are as relevant as it was 5,000 years ago, is it not? It is as relevant as it was 5,000 years ago, because right now I got into this chariot, I have to drive this chariot. So I have to know how to drive the chariot, what's the way to handle this chariot. So each one of the human being who has accepted a material body, they have to take shelter of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita will guide the chariot in the right direction and will give all the knowledge and help what is needed to take it to the right destination. That's why Kathopanishad says, Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam, it will reach the proper destination. If not, what will happen is, after this journey, or in this particular chariot will topple, break everything. You will get another chariot immediately in another womb. It may not be the same chariot as a human chariot. It could be a snake, or it a cat, or a dog, whatever chariot it is. And in that chariot you can run. But only difference is, in that chariot you can't understand Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita you can understand only in this chariot. So that is why, when Brahma created this human body, he felt a certain amount of happiness. Why? Because at least Brahma thought, if this particular form, if he puts some effort into it, he can get out of it once for all. All the other forms, there is no possibility. But in this form, there is a possibility he can come out of it. That's why it's given such an importance. So here, what we have to remember is that, similarly in the Bhagavatam also, you have to see everything in a perspective. Why every canto, there is some strong messages coming from there. If you do not take that and simply say with katha, katha is good, katha is necessary for developing the devotion, bhakti in the heart. But simultaneously, it's also necessary to understand the principles, what Krishna has put through these different pastimes as well as the instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. So what do we now find is that Krishna has spoken here some important things. Krishna spoke to Krishna spoke to the gopis about the sannyasa ashram. And after the sannyasa ashram was spoken, Krishna only gave sannyas to them after getting rid of this bodily concept of life from them completely. If you go into the next verse in the text 3, you will find there a statement there. Arirutshu. Arirutshu, it begins with that, isn't it? And Arudham. And in order to do that for him, that means one has come to the spiritual life, it says Karma Yoga is necessary. Is it not? Karma Yoga is necessary. And for one who has come to the yoga process, Ashtanga Yoga system, Shamam or control of the mind is necessary. Two things Krishna has explained in that. Now, if you look at that also, it's important. Those verses are very important because this is how we understand the mind, how the mind is working. I'll give you a small example to understand this. Our nature is always to identify with the thoughts, isn't it? We identify with the thoughts. As soon as in the middle of the night some thoughts come, what do you do immediately? You forget that you are sleeping, you forget that you are confronted with some serious problem which you are expecting. It could be a good thing or a bad thing, it doesn't matter. But as soon as the thoughts come, the thoughts, is the, that's the point when the whole thing starts. When the thoughts starts interacting with the, in the mind, then immediately you wake up from there and you start thinking about it. Mind has taken you there straight away. So it's a mind that is taking you somewhere, and mind is what is keeping you somewhere. For example, suppose somebody is sitting here and is listening to all these things, but his mind is at home about something else. Can you say that he's here? No, he's at home at that time, isn't it? Because why? Although his senses, he's hearing everything what we are speaking here. He's hearing it. He is listening to everything, but his mind is not absorbed. Mind is at home. So strictly speaking, the person is at home, not here. Is it not? So the mind decides where you are, actually. If a mind is not, if you don't know the mind is doing everything, you will just go with the mind. Wherever the mind takes you, you just go along with it. The mind brings you here. You may say that, oh, sometimes this you can see very clearly in the classes also sometimes. Sometimes you are sitting and listening. Suddenly you touch the person next. Where are we now? You are sitting right in front of the speaker and then you are asking the person next, where are we now? Where was he? He was at home or at the office or somewhere else. So that is where he was. And he is thinking that, oh, I have been to the classes, I have attended the full course, I got the certificate, everything. So that's what he is thinking. But that certificate has no use. Because again, just like mentioned, he has acquired a certain knowledge, like he has studied physics and chemistry. He has studied something and he has got some points, important points. He has put the yellow marker on top of that. And he has studied. And this is what, if I remember, I can answer all the questions. Like we do at the examinations, isn't it? But we take all the important things, what likely to be asked, the questions. And we mark them all, and we keep that in our memory, and as vomit everything in the answer paper, and as soon as it's finished, I got my degree, forget it now, look for something else. This is the kind of knowledge we are developing in the material world. That is not spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is that knowledge that starts manifesting in us. That is, becomes knowledge. Otherwise, it is just like any other knowledge. So there Krishna says that control of mind, control of senses, control of intelligence. When these three things are completely under control, then this knowledge will quickly manifest in a person. Very quickly it will manifest in a person. It won't take much time. That's what Krishna's statement is. So Krishna goes through these three verses and talked about Arirutshu and also the personality yogi. For him, Shamam is important. Why these things are important? You may think why they are important. They are important because the knowledge is not manifesting in a person. The knowledge is not manifesting. Why? Because these things are not under control. Senses are not under control. Mind is not under control. Intelligence is not under control. So as soon as they come under control, everything will manifest. Now, how powerfully, when I say this, that we identify with the thoughts, it's not a very simple statement. You have to look at your own mind at your own time, and you can see yourself how many times you have identified with the mind and suffered due to that. Example, once a person, he lived in a village, and he was a householder, wife and children, happy household life he lived. After some time, the children all grew up. When they all grew up, and they all had to leave home, isn't it? At some point or other, they have to go. So naturally, they go to big cities looking for work. And they went to different kinds of responsibilities they have taken, gone to big cities. Because this going to cities and looking for job is a modern phenomenon. Didn't exist all the time throughout history. It's only has started ever since we started this industrial culture has developed this into that pattern of life. Prior to that, everyone lived wherever they were born and they lived a life and they died there. But now it's not like that. You have to go through all over the world before you die. So anyway, the children grew up and they went away from home. They went away. So unfortunately what happened, his wife died in due course of time. This all things happens, isn't it? One after the other, one leaves the body and then the very thing what one was thinking that will protect me at time of death, they say goodbye to you first. So when they left, he became alone at home. There was no one at home. He was alone living in a house on his own. And the children will come from the cities to visit him during the holidays for 3 weeks or 4 weeks sometimes. When they come home, they see the father sitting alone at home and feels a lot of compassion for him. They want him to come to the city to live with them. But father says, I had been to your city once, that's enough for me. He says, you are living in the 16th floor or 18th floor like a bird in the nest. I'm not used to all that. I like my rivers and the trees and the plants on the ground. I'm used to my garden. I don't want to suffer like that, living that. I come and stay 2 or 3 days, that's enough for me. But I'll live here. So he's not willing to move to the city because he, by now in his mind, he has a deeper understanding of life. Whereas the young man has went to the city with the whole goal of making money and enjoying life and so many things. All that's finished for him. So the sons don't know. At the same time, sons want him to come to city. He doesn't want to go. Son says to him, I can't come to here to live because my jobs are there, my children are at school there, and I'm working, my wife is working, everybody is working, we are earning so much money, this, that and the other. He is not interested in all this Puranam, what you are trying to present it to him. His mind is thinking about what's going to happen after death. This is what he is thinking. If he is sensible, I'm saying. So, these people, so sons, after their holidays, they are going back to their cities where they have come from. So when they are going back, they go to the father and tell him that it is pity that we have to go alone. They know the normal way they express their feelings. And father says, no, that's okay. But then the elder son says to him that what disturbs us is that you are living alone at this age in life, which may not be very good. So meanwhile, I have found a solution, he says to the father. Father says, what is that? Son says, I've got a friend who has moved to this place and he is working as a security guard in a nearby place and he needs a place to live. And he's a very nice person. So I was thinking that why doesn't he move in and live with you here? We've got plenty of space in the house. If he can also live with you, at least I have and he's a good friend of mine, at least I know that if you have any difficulty, he will at least phone me or let me know what the condition is. Or if any help is needed, I can immediately come home. Like this, he said to him. The father says, yes, I don't mind if somebody comes in. I have no problem. And there was enough space. So they decided to give the upstairs of the house to the new person. And the father was living downstairs. So now the son has gone back. The father and the son's friend, they are living together in this house now. They are living together. And this man who works as a security person, whatever, you know, the security guard's job, whatever he was doing, when do they work? They work at night, isn't it? Their life is like that. They are tied by the timings like that. So the old man, he is during the day, he is awake. The security man, he sleeps during the day. And he goes at night very happily to work. And this person goes to sleep. So there is not much of a talk time to talk to each other. Only except during the weekend or so, they get time to talk to each other. So, after a few days, this person who has moved in now, he is a security guard. So he wears all these heavy boots, you see, like the military boots, you know, which the security guards wear. And he was in the military before, in the army, before he took up this, after his retirement, he has took up the security job. Because normally that's what they do. They join some security organizations or so. So he has got this similar army boots still with him. And he will go to work in the evening, sometime about 7, 8 o'clock in the evening, and comes at about 2 o'clock in the morning, early hours in the morning. When he comes, what he does is, because of that military training, his body massage is very brisk, he walks. He will climb the wooden staircase upstairs. Chuck, 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 he will climb the whole thing. Not like us, one step after the other. He is so fast, he will climb the whole staircase upstairs. As soon as he gets to his bed, he's very tired. So what does he do? He takes one boot off and throws it. Takes the other one, throws it. Now, this has got a wooden ceiling. Right underneath, in the ground floor, the old man is sleeping. And he, by now, due to his old age and all the other bodily difficulties, he gets a few hours of sleep with a great difficulty at night. Now, as soon as at 2 o'clock this man comes, and first he throws the one boot, he wakes up straight away from his sleep. And then he throws the second boot, he's completely awake, his sleep is finished for that night. So poor man has started suffering like this. He couldn't do anything about it. So he thought, what to do now? We have to do something about it, because every night this is happening. The poor other security man was also not aware of this, that he was doing this. He was just doing it in his usual way. He thought the other man is sleeping, let me also get into bed and sleep. So he went 1 or 2 weeks like that. Then one day, the old man thought, I should talk about this with him, to do things in a little quieter way, to take the boots in a quiet way and to leave it. Because it is that throwing that boot suddenly gives a big sound on the ground floor, and he wakes up. So what he did was, one day morning, when he was coming downstairs after his sleep in the night, the old man was sitting and reading the newspaper. So he thought he should talk to him, and he spoke to him, and he said that, I hope everything is going okay. My stay here is not causing any inconvenience. He put it in a very polite way to the old man. Old man thought this is the right time to mention this. He was thinking in his mind how to put it to him. He said to him like this. He said that everything, I have no problem with you, but except that, you know, at 2 o'clock when you come back, when you throw that boots onto the ground, onto the floor, it really disturbs my sleep, and I'm finished with that. After that, I can't sleep, he said. So the security officer, he says to him, that is not a big problem. I'll be careful in the future not to do that. I'll make sure that it doesn't wake you up, he said. Saying that, he went to work that day also. He was working whole night. He was tired. He came back in the night, and our old man was sleeping. So he took his first boot and threw it, forgotten that he has promised him not to do it. After the first boot was thrown, suddenly came to his senses, oh, I have promised the old man not to do it again. So the second boot, he quietly takes it out. But you know what happened to the old man at that time? Old man was, as soon as the first boot hit the floor, he was waiting for the second one to come. And when the second one didn't turn up, immediately he went upstairs and started knocking at the door of the security guard. Why, what happened today, he said. So he says, I woke up, and mind was so much identifying with that thought, to so deeply involved in the thought of this falling of the boots on the floor, that he could not resist. He could not control his mind. He had to get up and walk up and ask him what happened. And then he apologized again to him and told him that I will not do this again. It was another mistake. I only realized it after throwing the first boot away. So virtually, over a period of few days, he has habituated to this thought that if I don't hear that two knocks of the boots on the floor, my sleep at 2 o'clock is going to be very painful. I won't be able to sleep further after that. So he has got used to it. In other words, he has identified his mind with the thoughts of the boots falling so strongly. Don't you think this is exactly what we do in our life as well? All kinds of garbage thoughts comes in, and we keep identifying with each and every one of them, and then suffer from that. Isn't it? And suffer from those thoughts. This is what goes on in our life also. If you separate those thoughts, what is actually useful and what is actually not useful. Sometimes people will hear Channel 4 news, and after hearing the channel, they'll sit in front of the Channel 4 news in the television screen, and they will identify with everything what's happening throughout the world, and they will suffer the whole time. Worse than that is the serial, when they see the serial. When they watch the serial, if you look how they watch the serial, in the serial, the actor or actress or whoever is doing whatever tragedy or comedy, whatever is functioning, he is so absorbed in that, the person who is seeing that. When the actress is put into such distress, sometimes tears are coming from the eyes of this person. Actress is not crying. She has put the makeup and the drops to come from the eyes. This person who is watching, he is crying. You see, because he has identified with that actress to that extent. But actress is not identified. You have identified with the actress. Actress had to struggle very hard to get a few tears to come from the eyes. You don't know how many hours the actress has spent in the room to get these tears out from the eye. But you're not seeing that. What you're saying? And then sometimes what do? When you see sometimes so horrible scenes where you see somebody suffering heavily, you start looking up like this. You don't want to look at the screen. You don't want to see the screen anymore. And you wait till the scene changes. This all people do. You can see in any home and watch people how they... This is the strong identification of the mind. Krishna is saying there, if you don't study this mind, and if you don't put the rope on the mind, you, what will left behind at the... You may be anybody in this world. No matter, you could be president or prime minister or anyone, doesn't matter. Ultimately, he has to suffer. Because this is how it is created. Some people say, I will drink something and forget all my worries and get escape from this. And they get their mind strong in that way. But all this is not the solution. Solution is, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, that get this mind under control. And that is why, in that particular example I was mentioning, how powerful the mind is, very quick to identify with something. So, when these thoughts are coming one after the other, we need to know how to keep them at distance, how to control them and keep them at distance. If one is in total Krishna consciousness, this is why Krishna consciousness comes in. When one serves Krishna, with the proper understanding that my duty is to please Krishna, and this work, what I am doing, as a service, what I am doing, may please Krishna in my life. I'm supposed to do that. If I'm not doing that, I'm just working for the sake of getting the money, then that's not pleasing Krishna, nor you're doing anything for the mind. So it's a big difference. Krishna consciousness becomes serious business when one understands these principles behind it. When Bhakti Yogam becomes powerful, when Bhakti Yogam changes a person, when Bhakti Yogam continues to support the spiritual life of a person, is that when one understands that it is for Krishna's enjoyment and is acting under the direction of Krishna. These two things, Bhoktratvam and Kartratvam, those two things, Bhoktava is Krishna and Kartava is also Krishna, is through us, it is functioning like that. We are only serving Krishna in order to please Krishna. Krishna is engaging us in this service. Otherwise, it is simply karmam. It is simply karmam, nothing else but karmam. And means reactions from the activities also. If you look sometimes in the material life also, this identification of thoughts with the family, with the society is so strong. If the father or mother dies, you will cry for 1 year maximum. After 1 year, you will take it for granted. Oh, they have gone now. They are not going to come back. That is firmly fixed up in the mind. For 1 year, you may cry for 1 year. The thoughts may come back to you. If it is some relative, closer relative, maybe perhaps 3 months, can give 4 months, 6 months, maybe you will cry on that. If it is a distant friend who is not known to you very well, then if it lasts for 2 or 3 days, it must be a surprise. And if somebody whom you do not know at all, he died due to some catastrophe, either earthquake or floods or whatever it is, then you will say, look at this, this won't happen here, this will only happen there. How can it happen here? And you will give some other excuse and completely leave it there and then and there. So like this, all these interaction of the mind, depending on the senses and sense objects, will continue in this world. Krishna is saying that one has to know that these things are transitory. They are not there forever. You, the individual, as beginning of Bhagavad Gita itself, Krishna started with this particular point. Then Ashochyananya Shojastvam Pratyavadam Shabashase Gadasuna Gadasumsha Nanishochandi Panditaha. Learned person does not allow his mind to identify with all these objects in this world and suffer due to that. His mind is fixed upon the spiritual identity or the part and parcel of Krishna. That is why we are always falling. We are struggling throughout life to make progress in spiritual path. But all the time, because the mind is not allowing us, we are always driven downwards. Driven downwards. Every day. Years and years, people have practiced in the spiritual life. But because they are not put any endeavor to understand the powerful mind and to understand the controlling of the mind, as Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, we always end up in difficulties. We still think that why nothing is happening in my life, in my spiritual life. This is where it's coming from. So, what does Krishna do in the next verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna has given a very important message to us. The very Krishna who spoke to us, he is our friend. And the very Krishna who told us that you surrender unto me, that Krishna is saying here, no, it doesn't happen like that, Krishna says. Krishna says like this, that this mind, if you read the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions there, mana eva manushyanam karanam bandham okshayoho. Bandham and moksham, or the bondage and release. What do you call it? Bondage and release, yes. Bondage and liberation, whatever they call it. Bondage and liberation, there is only one cause for that. What is that? Mana, manasa, or mind. That is in the, Prabhupada has quoted that in the verse on the verse chapter 6, in verse 5. The verse 5 you will see in the comment, in the purport. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayoham bandhaya vishaya sango mukyam nirvishayam mana. That sense objects has to come out of the mind. Nirvishayam mana. For man, mind is a cause of bondage and mind is a cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. Krishna says like that. So, you can see from that verse what Krishna has tried to tell us, that unless we accept this powerful mind, why did Arjuna keep complaining about the mind to Krishna? Because mind is the one that puts the block for everything. We have no control on the mind and we have never taken the effort to understand the mind. So this mind, Krishna is saying here, that you should elevate the soul with the help of the mind. That's what Krishna is saying in that verse. Uddhared alpanalpanam alpanam avasadayel almanyayu almano bandhu almayayu viriralmanaham. Bhagavad Gita says like this. Uddhared alpanalpanam. Only in the last chapter Krishna says that I am your friend. Isn't it? I am your friend. But what does Krishna say in this chapter? I am not your friend. You do yourself what is to be done. Don't hang on to me thinking that I will do that for you. It's not going to happen. This is what Krishna likes. Krishna says this to Uddhava. Krishna says this to Arjuna also. Arjuna says, you should elevate yourself. That is that particular word. Uddhared. Uddhared means elevate the soul, yourself. Elevate the soul. Uddhared. Atmanam, Atmanam. Uddhared Atmana, Atmanam. Atma has got many meanings. Mind, intelligence, body and soul. Everything is depending on where it is used. So in this particular verse you will also see there, Uddhared Atmana, Atmanam. You should elevate your soul with the powerful mind what has been given to you. So if you don't know how to handle the mind, intelligence and the senses properly in elevating the soul, it is like a system what Krishna has given to us. This material body called a chariot is a system of 3-4 components. The subtle body particularly, mind, intelligence, the senses and the soul. So you have to use the three how to lift the soul further from this conditioned state. Otherwise it will not get out of it. It will continue to suffer. Uddhared almanalpanam. Try to elevate the soul from its conditioned state. That's what Krishna says. Using your mind. Almanam na avasadayel. Don't allow the Atma to degrade itself. This is Krishna's point. Krishna says, unless you try put your energy into elevating the soul from its fallen condition, it's not going to rise. It's not going to happen. Don't allow the soul to... Of course the soul doesn't degrade. But what does degradation mean? Degradation means getting bound in this material world further and further. Not having the proper knowledge of the science of the soul or the Bhagavad Gita and trying to give up the spiritual life. So, Uddharet Atmana Alpanam, Alpanam Avasadayal, Alpanyai Valpano Bandhu, Atmaiva Viriralmanah. Actually, Krishna says there, the soul has only one friend. That's your mind. And that mind can be your best friend and can be your best enemy also. If you have trained yourself in such a way that the mind, if you have learned to control it, he can be your best friend in advancing spiritual life. On the other hand, if you have abused the mind and you have used for sense gratification driven by the senses, then the very same mind can be your worst enemy as well. That's what Krishna is saying like that. Uddharet Atmana Alpanam, Alpanam Avasadayel, Alpanyai Valpano Bandhu, Atmaiva Viriralmanaham. Important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. These verses are such deep-rooted meanings because what Krishna speaks, nobody else says. I will tell you why. In this particular verse, Krishna says here that the responsibility is on you, not on me, Krishna says. It's on you. All the big politicians and the leaders, what do they say to us? They'll tell you, this is your birthright, isn't it? They tell you, this is your birthright. You have to get this from the state, that from the state. So many things they will present to you and tell you, they are in ignorance, you are also in ignorance. So together we make a good project out of it. So these politicians and leaders, they come and keep telling us, this is your rights, you know, you should fight for your rights. You got this thing is your right, that thing is your right, so many rights. Have they ever spoken to you what your duty is on this? No. They say you have no duty. Only a job, whole life is to shout for the rights. All the time ask for the rights from the government, rights from this, rights from that. So the whole life gets centered around this one thing, fighting for the rights, isn't it? Now when it comes to responsibility, as well as one's own responsibility, leaders doesn't think that you have any responsibility. They may say certain things. But strictly speaking, in Krishna consciousness, Krishna's philosophy is like this. Krishna says that you have a responsibility more than a right. Because what is required for fulfilling that responsibility, I have already given you. The other things, as material life is concerned, there you don't have to make a big claim out of it. That will happen in its own way. Like Prahlada Maharaj said also, Sukham Aindriyagam Daityo Dehayogi Nadehinam Sarvatra Labhyade Devam Yatha Dukha Vayatnada. Prahlada Maharaj's logic was like this. He says, for happiness I don't have to struggle very much. Not only that, everyone in this world is struggling for happiness only. Nobody is inviting distress, do they? Nobody asks for distress. But even though he is struggling for happiness, the result what is coming often is distress at the end, isn't it? You didn't ask for distress. In your agenda, the whole work was executed only for one reason, to fulfill your desires and to become happy in life, isn't it? Prahlad is saying there, in the Srimad Bhagavatam you will find, Sukham Aindriyagam Daityam. My dear, he is telling this to Hiranyakashipu, my dear Daitya, the Sukham or happiness is simply sensual. A self-realized soul will speak like this. Ordinary people won't say like this. Sukham Aindriyagam Daitya Sarval Sarvadehena Dehinam. It is available in all different kinds of bodies. For that you don't have to put a special endeavor. Sarvatra Labhyade Devam Yatha Dukhamayatnada. It's available in all different species. You don't need a human body for this purpose. This is Prahlad's logic. And which is very logical also. If you see your own life, you can see how the whole 50 or 60 years, whatever you have spent in this world, you are only struggling for happiness, weren't you? Every one of us. If we never thinking that, oh, I want some distress, that's why I'm working so hard. Nobody does that, does they? We get up early hours in the morning, go to office, stay very late in the evening, come home. All for what? Just to become happy in life at the end, isn't it? So, happiness is the goal, but then from somewhere, distress is coming. So we didn't ask for it, but it is given to us by some arrangement, isn't it? So Prahlad is saying there, this is the nature of the material world. You cannot change it. So his point is this, that because happiness, distress is coming uninvited, happiness will also come to a large degree uninvited. Your own effort is not that, not to simply waste the whole life for that purpose is not worthwhile. This is the point. So Krishna is saying here, in this particular, Udharet alpana alpanam, alpanam avasadayel. Don't allow the soul to degrade because of all your so-called material complexities, what you have got up, caught up in this world. Everybody is caught up. Somebody is a chief executive of a multinational corporation. He is working 24 hours in order to keep thinking that the company is going because of me. And similarly, all the big politicians, big leaders, and everyone in the society is acting on the same principle. So ultimately what's happening is, Krishna is saying that, you have lost your Alma. The soul has lost a chance to get out of this entanglement. Alma eva hi almano bandhu. Alma eva virira almanaha. Alma, soul has got only friend, one friend, that is this mind. You have to make the friend as a, make the mind as a friend of the soul. If you do not do that, what will become is that very same mind will become your enemy. Krishna has spoken all these things to us. It's not only, to tell you the truth, it's not only the spiritual life, you see. We are thinking that we have so many friends in this world and so many relatives in this world, and we are busy fulfilling all their desires, the so-called friends and relatives. They'll take all your lifetime in doing that process. And not only that, in the even they will, up to the very last minute, till you leave this body, they'll give you trouble in some form or the other. They'll be with you. And so-called community, another disaster, recipe for disaster. So all this community life, yes, it will help you to have a cushy time in this world. But the time of leaving the body, all the lifetime you have spent in serving the community and the family and the society, that will not be there. When you are taken to the, what they call the ICU, isn't it? Intensive care unit at the last minute. When they take you, they'll stop you there. All the friends and relatives have to stay there, they'll say. They are not allowed, only you are allowed to go in. Who goes with you at that time? Suhradam sarvabhudanam jnatva mam shantim ruchyate. Krishna goes with you. Nobody else will go with you. He is there also in the intensive care unit with you, in the ICU. He is also there. All the so-called friends and relatives whom you are trying to make friendship and place in your life, they all leave you at that point because they are not allowed to come in. And they'll say, anyway, he's going now. Let's see, we'll wait for the result. They'll stand there showing each other their grief. And maybe in a few hours the doctor comes and announces he's finished everything. And then they all go get into their cars and drive home. That's it, finished. So if you want to end up like this, Krishna says, while going to the intensive care unit, if you don't want to think of me even then, how will the thoughts come at that time? Because you are busy with the friends and relatives whole life, where is the possibility of thinking about Krishna at that time? That chance is not going to happen. So this is why Bhagavad Gita is bringing this point to us, that unless and until one separates oneself from all this false bodily identification with the family, friends, society, this, that and the other. Vedavyasa Maharshi uses very, very powerful words in the Srimad Bhagavatam about this. What does he say? Yasya alma buddhi kuna petri dhaduge sodhi kalatra adishubhauma ijyadi yat girtha buddhi salilena karhijal janeshu abhinyeshu sa eva gokharaham. Krishna Vedavyasa is saying this. When was this spoken? Have you seen in the Srimad Bhagavatam these words? Yasya alma buddhi kuna petritha duge. When one identifies with the body made of this material element, or the Vairuvedam, it is spoken as vadam, pitam and kapam, prithadu. So when one identifies with this material body, which we are all dust, sodhi kalatra dishubhauma ijadi, I start thinking the place where I am born is something very glorious. I must worship that place and I am always belong to that place. And I'll support my community there, who lives there. I belong to them. You know, I was born and bred there. I feel so much identity with the place where I was born. I'm thinking like this. Sodhi kalatra dishubhauma ijyadi. Kalatram means his own wife. This is my wife. She loves me so much. And I love her so much. and so much attachment, relationships have been built upon this. Then, yatirthabuddhi salile nakarhijil. Then he goes, the same person who has done all this in his life, he catches a flight and goes to Benares to bathe in the Ganga River. And he bathes in the Ganga River on a beautiful day like the Kumbh Mela day or something like that. I got all the punyam in my life now. Now I can go back and do what I want, what I've been doing all along my life. I'll continue doing that. This is the consciousness when he is coming back. As far as bathing is concerned, he has bathed and he has finished it. Vedavyas is saying, it is not much different than the buffalo bathing in that river. Buffalo is also bathing there. Not only us, if you go to Ganga River, you will find buffaloes are bathing, cows are bathing, sometimes hogs are bathing, and we are also bathing. So, Vedavyas is concerned, there is not much difference between you, the hog, the buffalo and the cow, who is all the time bathing in the Ganga River. Why? Janeshu abhityeshu sa eva gokharaham. They are all cows and asses, he says. Why? Because he has whole life, he is simply identifying with the body and thinking that this is me. And he has not put any effort to understand Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna has spoken about it. And all the transcendental knowledge Vedavyasa has disseminated through Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, he has not taken any effort to learn anything from that. He is just thinking, my father has told me like this, my grandfather has told like this. This is our tradition in the family. And he brings back all his family traditions at the time of ritualism along with it. And he makes a mess of the whole thing. Temporarily he gets a peace of mind. I have done everything what I have to do. But he hasn't done anything for spiritual life, for Krishna consciousness. What has he done? All he has done is to perform. And this is exactly the reason why Narada Maharshi and Vedavyas fought each other in the beginning of Bhagavatam. Narada Maharshi had to fire Vedavyas that you are talking about all this dharmam. And what did they learn at the end? Tell me one person who has come back to the spiritual world by executing his dharmam. And we are so proud of the so-called dharmam. What will dharmam will do at the end? Dharmam cannot help. Dharmam is not the ultimate goal. Ultimate goal is Krishna consciousness. So unless and until we come out of all these different network, what we have created around us, and free ourselves from that, and come to the real substance, the material, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita through different verses. Uddhare dalpana alpanam, alpanam avasadayel, alpanyayu alpano bandhu, atmayiva viriralmanaham. So Krishna's words are very powerful. We have to absorb that and take that more seriously than any other thing in this world. There is no ritual more important than the Bhagavad Gita. There is no dharma more important than the Bhagavad Gita. There is no swadharmam to please member of the society, family, relatives, community or this, that or the other. They all come later on. Important thing is to accepting what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. We will discuss it next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.